everybody else below the fray instead of above the fray.
So at the end of the day, strategy. Who is your strongest candidate?
In the general election, I think Rudy Giuliani would be our strongest candidate against them. Marginally better than Thompson, but that's my take on it right now. They'd run totally different kinds of campaigns. They'd be strong for different reasons. Fred
and
Thompson.
Both of them would be stronger than Romney or McCain.
Giuliani is a pit bull. People would respect his strength and his independence. Fred Thompson is everybody's grandfather. People just like the guy. He's so likable. He's just, you know.
But you think both of them are stronger than either Romney or McCain?
At this point, I would say, my estimate is they'd be stronger than either Romney or McCain.
I think Hillary is by far the strongest Democratic candidate. Like I said, I may still vote for Barack Obama, mostly because I like what he has to say, and I kind of want to give a shout-out to a new politician. But at the end of the day, I ended up voting for Hillary Clinton because...
This is the Quality News Network. By the end of 2008, an estimated 2 million subprime mortgages are scheduled to reset to higher levels by the end of the year. Today, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson said federal Treasury officials are holding talks with mortgage companies to work out an agreement to freeze the lower introductory rates and keep them from resetting to higher levels. U.S. intelligence has determined that Iran halted its nuclear weapons program in 2003. A U.S. intelligence report cautioned, though, that Iran is continuing to develop the resources to build a nuclear bomb. Progress in the effort to make products from China safe. The U.S. is set to sign agreements with the Chinese government to ensure more product safety for goods from China. Health and Human Services Secretary Mike Leavitt said the Chinese have worked aggressively to bring their products up to American standards. On Wednesday, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear the appeal of Guantanamo Bay prisoners who say they were wrongly detained and falsely accused of terrorism. Most of the 305 prisoners have been detained since 2002 without being charged, and many complain of abuses. In national elections this weekend, Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez failed to win his bid to suspend term limits so that he could rule indefinitely. Citizens voted down his proposal. Russian President Vladimir Putin's party won more than 60% of that country's national vote. That means when term limits force Putin to step down early next year, he may stay in power by being appointed prime minister. In Pakistan, former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif has been banned from candidacy in January elections. The Election Commission ruled Sharif against him because of his criminal convictions, allegedly for terrorism and hijacking during the 1999 military coup of Pervez Musharraf. Under intense international pressure, Sudan's president has pardoned the British schoolteacher in prison for allowing her 7-year-old students to name a teddy bear Mohammed. The 50-year-old teacher was escorted out of Africa. In the West Bank, 429 Palestinian prisoners returned home after Israel released them. The early release was a gesture by Israel to help shore up support for moderate Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The federal government says that more than 40 million people in the U.S. cannot afford health care. The report by the Centers for the Disease Control also revealed that 25 million Americans didn't seek dental care and 19 million are without needed prescribed medicine. Ford Motor Company ended a year-long losing streak. Ford sales were up slightly from a year ago. Leading the pack was the Ford Focus sedan, which was up 18% from a year earlier. Health officials at the Centers for Disease Control are revising their numbers of how many people are infected with the AIDS virus each year. The CDC has been estimating a rate of about 40,000 HIV cases, but the new estimate is about 55,000 or higher. Idaho's leading newspaper, The Statesman, reports 8 men swear they had sex with Senator Larry Craig or were targeted sexually by him. Convicted in a homosexual sting in a Minneapolis restroom earlier this year, the powerful Republican later denied charges and refused to resign from Congress. The world's largest conference over on climate change opened this morning in Bali. The two-week UN summit has attracted more than 10,000 attendees from 190 countries. Light sweet crude oil is trading up 60 cents at $89.31 a barrel. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones ended down 57 points. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Okay, Tokyo, South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, as you can see, or I hope not hear, not see yet, that's still in the offing. But as you can hear, it's me, I'm live, and no, following the humiliating, sickening defeat of my beloved Mountaineers on Saturday evening to our hated rival Pitt, I did not leap into the river and drown, as I had suggested I might, though the temptation was surely profound to do so. Maybe one of these evenings we'll have to have horn psychologist Rick Goodner on to talk about why sports fans take losses by their teams so personally and so viscerally. I'll be honest. Saturday and Sunday just went straight to hell as a result of that loss. Because I am a diehard Mountaineer fan, and it did hurt like hell. I was tempted to drop a note to our dear friend Bart Kopp, who is, of course, an Oklahoma Sooners fan, whom the Mountaineers will now be playing in the Fiasco Bowl, or Fiesta Bowl. It'll only be a Fiasco Bowl once we start playing it, and challenge him to like a little, you know, $10 wager or something. But I don't think I'm going to do that. Don't have the $10 to throw away, and I know I'd be paying up. Oh, God. But, you know, for those of you who didn't know, yeah, my Mountaineers, who averaged something on the order of 40 points a game, could only muster 7 points against a what was at that point in time a 4-7 Pitt squad. Yeah. Just, yeah. We came out and we played conservatively. We played poorly. We came out and played stiff. Like we were, we played like we were trying to hang on to something as opposed to grab something. Now, on the other side of the coin, the number one team in the country, for those of you who don't follow sports, which was Missouri, also gagged to the aforementioned Oklahoma. So 1-2 went down, leaving the national title championship to be sorted out by Ohio State University and the single most overrated team in the country, LSU. Go figure. Oh, well. I guess that means there will definitely be a show on, what is it, January the 8th, when the national championship is played. Otherwise, you know, because had the Mountaineers been in it, I would have taken the night off. I really would have. Sorry, I'm just a fan. But we don't have to worry about that now. So, you know, that's what that is. Now, to tell you the truth, I may need some help tonight. We have been without electricity the better part of the day because of the windstorm that came howling out of the upper Midwest and down into the mid-Atlantic states. I mean, you know, we've got a few years ago for Christmas, I got Agnes, she loves wind chimes, and I got her a set of these really, really beautiful, tonally, perfectly pitched, tuned wind chimes, really heavy. And lo and behold, the wind was such that the darn things were just about sideways all night long. Sounded like a car wreck happening on the front porch. And apparently somewhere along the way it blew a tree down that knocked down a power line that utterly confused the fine folks at Appalachian Power, so a whole bunch of people in this area were taken off the grid all day long. Some of them all night long. So I know practically nothing about what is going on in the world today. Now, of course, I read all weekend long. You know, I sort of, you know, had my head in my hands and I'd peep at the computer screen yesterday while I was still salving my wounds from our loss. And speaking of which, you know, I mean, the Mountaineers are highly funded by the coal industry, so it really does put me at cross purposes. But anyway, no, I saw some stories that I found rather interesting yesterday. But as for what's going on today, I may need you to kick in and do some editorial work, if you will, simply because I feel, even if I'm not particularly out of the loop, one thing is for sure, and that is this. George Bush has been busted again. Came out in the New York Times today. Headline, U.S. says Iran ended atomic arms work. I feel like I've been to this movie before. This time they got busted before they could start the war, but please understand it doesn't change by any degree their desire to start a war with Iran. The new assessment by the American intelligence community concludes that Iran halted, not suspended, not delayed, not slowed down, but halted its nuclear weapons program 4 long years ago. The intelligence estimate further asserts that the program is still frozen and nothing indicates that it's in the process of getting unfrozen. And bear in mind, this is the consensus view of all 16 American spy agencies. Frankly, it baffles me and boggles my mind when I think about the fact that we have 16 spy agencies, but that we do. And all 16 of them agree that Iran is not, at present, pursuing any nuclear weapons at all. Now, with that in mind, let's back up just a second. And Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for Lying SOB, would you please? Yeah, here we go, I hope. because that's certainly not what dear leader has said.
Since the atomic bomb ended World War II, discussions about the next world war usually remind us of the potential for a nuclear exchange annihilating the planet. Today, President Bush raised the duty
from softballs on NBC.
I told people that if you're interested in avoiding World War III, it seems like you ought to be interested in preventing them from having the knowledge necessary to make a nuclear weapon. And I take the threat of Iran with a nuclear weapon very seriously.
The president now seems to believe Iran...
Yeah. If you're interested in it, well, you heard it. You heard it from the dummy's lips. What's the excuse? They didn't tell him? They told him, but he forgot. A little bit more viable. They told him, but he didn't understand. What's the White House excuse for just lying to the American people and saying that Iran was on the verge of, well, you heard it, starting World War III? I'm crickets. I'm waiting. Of course, what it boils down to is, had a Democrat made the assertions, deliberately false assertions, that George Bush has made. Now, let's be honest, had Bill Clinton made the assertions that George Bush has made, we would still be having impeachment proceedings. But thanks to the fact that, you know, impeachment's off the table, we won't have to deal with that problem. We won't have to deal with a man who has stood before the American people and said, Iran is trying to get nuclear weapons and we'll stop it. You know, whether it's Dear Leader or Dick Cheney, or any of the rest of that filthy cabal, we won't have to deal with actually holding them to account for it, because we somehow lack the stones to do so. Or we, you know, I just got an email that rolling in about my passionate, sickening feelings following the Mountaineer loss on Saturday night. Good idea to get Rick Goodner on. Because a great question is this one. Why do fans, those of us who pay to watch these teams play, refer to the teams they follow as we? Well, I don't think we need Rick for that one. I can answer that. Because we vicariously involve ourselves in their performance. And we associate their success with our own. Now, the next question is, when an administration is actively involved in lying to the American people, how should the American people refer to themselves, itself? When we use that collective we that includes lying people at the top of the totem pole, what does that say about us? I don't believe it. You don't believe it. But we have asserted it. It's like the old line about the United States before the Civil War and after the Civil War. Before the Civil War, proper grammar was to say the United States are. After the Civil War, the United States is. The question is, what are we to do about it? Can we do anything about it? So at about 19 minutes past the hour, let's see how many of these are beeping thingamabobs. Oh, that looks to be a real live, honest-to-goodness human being. Hey, who've I got?
Susan.
Hey, Susan, dear, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. While we're talking about getting Dr. Rick on, we should also get him on for... to explain why Fox won't run a commercial that accuses the demonstration of shredding the Constitution.
Yep, saw that. It's in the stack.
And also to explain...
why everything they do is pornographic.
Well, not only that, but Larry Craig's back in the news. The Idaho Statesman.
Oh, I know. Well, hang on here. Hang on here. Larry Craig is back in the news. Mike Jones, who brought down Ted Haggard.
And not only Mike Jones, but a bunch of other guys. And this time they put up audio recordings with these guys.
Right. And what I have here is Mike Jones. Stand by. Oh, we are running a little slow today. Here we go.
The one thing that stands out about this man, besides the fact that I recognized him and heard and recognized his voice when he spoke, was here's a man who, within the first 5 minutes of seeing me, said, "Do you follow politics, Mike?" Which is such a strange statement anyway, to begin with. And then he didn't follow up on it. He basically changed the subject. When I said yes, he said, "Oh, gee, it's cold outside." And that's in my mind. You can understand people in my business, you know, we're pretty good about figuring out people very quickly based on things they say or things they do. And so when he said that, in my mind, I go, "Oh, he's a politician," which was not my first by any means. But it didn't matter to me. That's not what I was in business for, was to really figure all that out or try to trap people. But it was a clear indication that he was a politician to me. And then he did something that only a few people did that saw me through the years, and that is he kept his clothes on.
Elaborate on that,
well,
please.
He took his dress shirt off, and he had a T-shirt on, and he undid his zipper and pulled his penis out, and he performed oral sex on me.
Well, okay. What a lovely way to start the program. Not that I care. That's really TMI as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
and it would be, and let's be clear, Susan, it would be TMI if it was Mrs. Craig talking about him getting it on with her.
The reason I care in the least is because A, he's closeted very deeply, and B, that makes him supremely blackmailable. If he had come out and said, "Yeah, I'm gay," what do you make of it? Any ability to be blackmailed goes down the tubes.
Right, sure. But as it stands, he could be blackmailed for his vote by a foreign power, say, who wanted us to go to war with Iran or Iraq,
exactly.
Or sure.
And that makes it my business.
Well, it makes it frankly, as someone who cares about human rights, it becomes your business when he authors legislation or signs on to legislation that denies basic constitutional rights to the vast majority of Americans.
And on top of that, the man's a pig.
Well, then there's
from the recordings, from the way described the way he treated these people, the man's a pig. I'm sorry, that's the only way to describe him. He's a pig.
Yeah, and that's actually being a little harder on pigs than they deserve.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
you
without
don't
a doubt.
Treat people like this. You know, he's treating these people like they're Kleenex, and it's just, yuck.
Okay, the Kleenex analogy got me. Sorry.
Well, as in disposable.
Yeah, I know, no, but you know what you just did, so, you know.
Yes, I know, I'm sorry.
Yeah, let's not have any more of that, please.
Yeah, but, you know, that whole thing, it puts it into the, yeah, I never had a problem with Barney Frank because he was openly gay. He was in Congress, he's openly gay, and fine. He did his business, his sexuality was his own business.
as is everyone's. That's the thing that drives me nuts about this, is that everyone's sexuality is their own business. And to quote our dear friend Peter, normal is nothing more than a setting on a dryer. But this man made millions of people's sexuality his business.
But by the same token, you couldn't go up to Barney Frank and say, I know you're gay, and so you're going to vote the way I want you to, because Barney Frank would have said, get out of my office. Or a lot stronger, probably. He would probably call the cops. Somebody could go up to Craig's office and say, I know you're gay, and I have proof. You're going to vote the way I want. And he'd have to say, how do you want me to vote?
Yeah, they'd say froggy, and he'd say how high.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Too true. All
Which
too true.
Which is why the don't ask, don't tell policy just makes me crazy.
Well, I've got a bunch of lights lit up here, Susan. I'm going to see which ones actually have people on them. I'll bet you three of them don't, but we're going to find out.
Okay. You have a nice night, and by the way, we had a massive wind and rainstorm ourselves.
Oh, I saw that. Mudslides and stuff out there?
Yeah, flooding in the whole nine yards.
Stay safe, please.
You too.
Bye.
Love to Agnes.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, how many of you are people? Let's see. You're not. You're not. You're not. There. Yeah, that's a people. Hey, who've I got?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke, how are you, buddy?
Well, let's put it this way, Bob. To start off with, we'll kill the football question. I don't care. I don't mind me being LSU's going as long as Georgia ain't.
Well, had LSU lost to Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
And then everything else transpired the way it did, yeah, you'd see Georgia in the national championship, and that's just intolerable.
I mean, you know, but like I say, that's our football. We're out of that. Hallelujah.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you still got a bowl game to worry about.
Well,
as do
I mean, we got a good bowl game. Hey, I'm happy to be going there. Everybody's going back to Chick-fil-A again.
You know, it surprises me that the committee passed on the idea of letting WVU and VPI renew its old rivalry down in Miami with the Orange Bowl and picked Kansas instead.
Well, you know, that's one of the things. That's the big boo-ha-ha today I've been hearing on sports radio was everybody was on the whole thing about, you know, about them going down there and Mizzou not getting knocked all the way out of all of it. You know, even though they beat, you know, that's who they beat. So
yeah, and there, you know, there's something to be said for that. But of course, that also explains why West Virginia winds up marching into the Oklahoma meat grinder, namely because you couldn't have a Big 12 matchup in the Fiesta Bowl between Kansas and Oklahoma.
Yep, the game that I think is going to be the absolute meat grinder: Michigan versus Florida.
Oh, I frankly would not be bothered in the
I'm not either. I'm just curious if Michigan will show up.
I'm curious as to whether or not Florida will need a third digit on the scoreboard.
This too,
just like
true.
Oklahoma.
Again, true. Well, first, let's get on to politics because I know you know we got limited time.
Oh no hurry, no hurry.
I know, but you know I hate taking up other people. Give them a chance to get in. Okay, on the NIE report.
I really want Hawaii to beat the snot out of Georgia. Okay, I said it.
I'm with you on that one. But on the NIE report.
Yeah.
We're getting publicly. That means the White House has probably had that thing for, I'd say, 18 months at a minimum.
Well, didn't we have an article a week or two ago saying that Dick Cheney had done everything in his power to keep this from coming out because he did know what was in it?
Because, like I say, this is different. Most of the security groups that they talk to, and they're saying this, and this is like they know this happened in 2003. So, like I say, you have to figure, okay, maybe 2005, you might get away with saying it was 2005, you know, 2 years ago when we knew it. Okay, 2 years ago we knew this.
Well, have you seen
what's been said in the last 2 years?
Have you seen the spin that Stephen Hadley put on this thing, Luke?
I, No, I tried watching about five minutes of that, and my head hurt.
It confirms that we were right to be worried about Iran seeking to develop nuclear weapons. It tells us that we have made progress in trying to ensure that this does not happen. But the intelligence also tells us that the risk of Iran acquiring a nuclear weapon remains a very serious problem.
Oh, good.
In other words, it says what it says, but it doesn't say what it says.
Even though we were wrong, we were right.
Yeah.
Oh, one quick thing on the Larry Craig thing. I don't want to get too much into that. I'm wondering if Mr. Craig has testified any time in the last couple of years that he isn't gay.
Because
if Mr. Craig has said I'm not gay, he may have some questions to answer.
You know, you wonder if he said that under oath in Minnesota, maybe.
Well, maybe if he said that there, or maybe if he's talked to the boys called the ethics committee.
Yeah, but they wouldn't do anything so tacky as to put him under oath, would they?
Well, you got to wonder, since it was a criminal investigation. I mean, since he confessed to a crime. If they, you know, because I wonder if you dotted the I's and crossed the T's and made him swear in. So this way, you know, Larry, this way we can claim you've told the total truth. I mean, that's the way I would have put it to it. So you swear in. That way we're all covered.
Yeah, but even so, they'd no, I'm not gay. I just enjoy performing fellatio. It's a hobby of mine.
Oh, God, take up knitting, please.
I know.
The one this weekend it got to me was watching CNN, I don't know what to call them anymore. I tell you what. The
Chicken Noodle News.
Yeah, that's good. I agree. That sounds good. Isn't it amazing how concerned everybody is over the fact that Chavez had elections in Venezuela? How dare he have elections? But, oh, by the way, Musharraf throws the Chief Justice off the Supreme Court because he's afraid he might tell him he can't run. Sticks a puppet on there, and we go, hey, that's great.
Very, very good. Yeah, true. An absolute, I mean, you know I get right-wing emails. Well, this in particular, they've been having an absolute hissy about Chavez all day. You know, Chavez stopped. Chavez's dictatorial march toward creating a socialist paradise in Venezuela has been halted.
Isn't it amazing how in South America the purple finger don't mean anything?
Yeah, I mean, he tried.
They were showing him. He
wanted what he wanted. He didn't get it. Now the question is, and I'm sure all the right wingers are screaming, well, now he'll just take power anyway.
Well, he's already got power, it's just whether or not he'd keep it. Of course, then he could do a pooty-poot. I'm no longer president, now I'm the prime minister.
It's like magic.
And my friend Topo Gigio is now president.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I hear while I drink water and hear him speak. Come on. You know, it's one of those things. It's like you were talking a minute ago about you know, the NIA thing about them. Well, we're really concerned about the Iranians having a nuclear weapon. It's like, okay, I want to see the first IAEA report on Israel.
On which?
Israel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to see, how often do they let the IAEA in there and look around?
That would be never.
Mm-hmm. So we have no clue what they've got.
Well, that's because we can trust them.
Don't get me wrong. I think Mossad's probably the most efficient people in what they do. But like I say, I wouldn't trust them. Let's put it this way, I'm playing Bill Hickok. I'm stepping my back to the wall.
Well, look, you know, they, like any other sovereign nation, are concerned first and foremost with their own well-being. And so if they can manipulate us to enhance their well-being, that is what they'll do. The question is whether or not the United States will allow itself to be so manipulated.
Well, I know. It's one of those things. It's like, you know, them get away with anything and deny it, and then when other people do the same thing, and we go, oh, you're the worst thing this planet's ever seen. It's like, oh.
I know.
I see, the other thing was, they were all over this thing today. Mr. Rove wrote an op-ed telling Barack it's time to attack. And I'm sitting there going, what news editor at Chicken Noodle News said this was a story we should really be covering, so now we've given free airtime to Carl, the new master of revisionist history.
Well, it's not just Carl Rove. You know, after the dog and pony show that passed for a debate, last week between the Repiglicans. They had, of course, Frank Luntz, I guess, on Fox.
Yep.
To talk of, you know, please.
Frank, who's the RNC?
Yeah. Then again, you know, I just think it's silly to listen to Republicans talking about what Democrats ought to do, because, and equally silly to hear Democrats talking about what Repiglicans ought to do.
Have you ever noticed, though, whenever they have either side, first thing they do is they go to a Republican analyst, and I'm sitting there going, huh?
Sure they do.
I'm sitting there going, we're going to Democrat, and they had Bill Bennett on.
But this is all journalism that begins from a position of fear, Luke, because if they don't immediately first go to the Repiglican analyst, then, you know, somebody out there, you know, L. Brent Bozo III, will claim media bias. Oh, it's liberal bias at CNN again. I mean, I got one of those right-wing newsletters today telling me that the dog and pony show last week with the Repiglicans was a set-up hatchet job by liberal, and once again they prove that they truly are the Clinton News Network.
Well, did you see what we were talking about the other day? Did you hear anybody mention the name Grover Norquist this last weekend? It's like, isn't it amazing, though, how you'll let a Republican? But see, this is Grover Norquist, who we know for like 10 years was famous because he would have all the Republican operatives in a breakfast once a week in his offices.
Yeah, and browbeat them.
Yeah. And sit there and work out strategy.
Now, some of that is rolling around again, because there's a question about the, candidates taking the no new taxes pledge. That's that's straight out of
Boring. Neil Boring. You know, that's his whole fair tax thing. That's where it's starting. And then going back to the old Bush 41 no new taxes pledge.
Yeah, and you wind up saying something stupid like read my hips.
Well, you know how it is. They figured it out now. Yeah, we have a war. We don't raise taxes. We lower them.
Yeah,
of course, that's why we now have a $9 trillion debt.
Well,
hey.
Yeah, that we. Yeah, no kidding. Luke, I'm going to roll along. I'm going to see if some of these lights are still people.
Okay, y'all have a good evening.
All right, take care.
See you.
Bye now. All right, let's see. Are you a people?
Hello?
Yes. You're a people. Hey, welcome to the program. Who have I got?
This is Phil in Daytona Beach.
Well, hey, Phil, how are you, buddy?
Okay, thanks. You mentioned Stephen Hadley, member of the Project for a New American Century.
That he is, card carrying.
These are the guys that came to power when Bush was inserted as the president of the United States.
The very ones.
Even. And even in the progressive anti-war community to this very effing day, you could line up 10 people.
Who wouldn't know who he is.
And ask them about the Project for a New American Century. And it's September 2000 plan. They published this. They do everything right out in the open, Bob. Because they know the people are not fulfilling their responsibility.
That's the best place to hide it from the American people, Phil.
Yes, and it's about time we stop talking and start acting. You know, you mentioned this from time to time that, you know, you got 3 out of 4 Americans are sick of this whole thing and want the troops out of Iraq, know that Bush and Cheney lied. You know, Hadley was the guy who reinserted the 16 infamous into the January 28th.
Yeah, the Niger Yellowcake.
Right,
yeah.
Right. With knowledge under Condoleezza Rice, his boss at the time. And now this guy is involved. The PNAC guys are still involved in selling this war on the basic PNAC plan, Project for a New American Century, was to invade Iraq, set up a permanent military presence for further invasions on Iran and Syria. I mean, they clear as day, all right? And for those of us who are in the know, there comes a time when silence is complicity. And I don't know how many U.S. troops were killed in Iraq today, how many innocent Iraqis who had nothing to do with these lies or 9/11 were killed today. I don't know how many of them had parts of their bodies blown off.
Nor how many will die tomorrow, the day after, or the day after. But no matter
what... Those of us in the know, Bob, who are real comfortable about talking about it, calling into the radio shows and, you know, and continuing to talk to each other, But you know, when you say 70% of the American people are against this, so we are doing this bullshit. 70% checked no on the survey. How many of this 70-75% of the American people are actually getting off their ass and out in the street? We've been out in the street for years, man, literally years, and we're still the first couple on the dance floor. Everybody else is sitting there talking at the tables yet. You know what I'm saying? And this thing ain't going to change, man. This is, we're up against more than we were up against in Vietnam, because we got a media that's now
Phil, there's one thing, and I've still got a stack of calls, so I do have to move along, but I don't know. The one thing I would point out to you, and I think it's a wrong choice, but I believe it is the reality with which we are dealing, is that Americans have moved into hunker down mode.
Please explain that.
Okay, they've got their head between their knees. They hope they don't have to kiss their asses goodbye. But all they want to do is hunker down and hope the hell that George Bush leaves office legally and peaceably on January 20th, 2009, because they have been told, and it's a lie, Phil, it's a lie, they have been told that it is impossible to impeach these bastards now. The numbers are out there, in excess of 50% of the people reporting supporting impeachment of both Cheney and Bush.
Right, and how many of these 50% people...
But they've been told that it cannot happen. Not only that, they've been told that it will not happen. So they're just going to hunker down. They're going to pray the economy doesn't fall through the floor.
And this blood is on their hands. My kid brother's going back on tour. You know, and how many people completing this 50% are actually more than just talking on radio shows and filling in online surveys? Bob, this is a country of for and by the people, meaning that the ultimate responsibility and the buck stops with us. And talk is cheap, man. You know, there comes a time, if you ain't acting on it, you're part of it, and you can explain it around and circle.
No, I'm not explaining it around or offering excuses, but I'm telling you that that's where we are. I do have to roll on though, Phil.
But all right, Bob. You know, talk's cheap, people.
Get after
it. If you ain't doing something about it, you're part of it, man.
If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Thanks, Phil.
Okay, Bob. Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And let's see who I've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Guy James.
Yes, sir.
I would know that mellifluous voice anywhere.
Well, my goodness. Bob, it's a pleasure to be alongside you. In Beckley, West Virginia, I'm... with you in spirit tonight, at least. I feel your pain, buddy.
Oh, it was bad pain, my friend, bad pain.
Here we are talking about serious world issues, and I call in to talk about football. But
no, you know what? I can only do warm tub of water, razor blade talk radio, so much of the time. And I know you can probably commiserate with this. This stuff drives me crazy. And I was, you know, somebody's got to win and somebody's got to lose. But I was looking for Saturday to be a reason to sort of get up above the misery for a little bit. Instead, I got put, you know, I got the college football sports equivalent of waterboarded.
Well, I was thinking of you. Of course, being a college football junkie, I was up Saturday night watching the festivities, hoping that my beloved Buckeyes would be able to be the recipients of a miracle, and we were. But I got to tell you, I was hoping that the Nears wouldn't be one of the gift givers. I was hoping that the Buckeyes and the Mountaineers could square off, and that would have been a...
Well, see, that would have been a border war, It would have been fun.
Yes, yes. I was at the first game that the that ever between the Buckeyes and the Mountaineers. It was in Columbus. I'm trying to think when it was back in the.
It was back in the 80s. It was in the middle of the Nealon years. I remember that because I was at the second one in 99 I think 1999. And that was because that was at Mountaineer Field.
I just thought it would be a wonderful thing if those two schools could meet in the national championship, but alas, it was not to be. I got to give them credit. The Panthers showed up to play defense. There isn't any question about that. But I feel your pain, buddy. I do.
Well, I thank you. And, you know, I think you've got a fighting chance against LSU because LSU is not Florida last year.
No, and the Buckeyes last year, I must tell you that I had a long, long conversation with Jim Boomen, who's the offensive coordinator of the Buckeyes. And he was down here, and we had a little visit. And he told me that he was not at all convinced that the Buckeyes were the physical, they weren't the physical equals of Florida. He said that the coaches had done a poor job preparing the team last year and that he thought we got the wrong impression from that game. So I think given a second chance, Jim Tressel given a second shot at the SEC, I'll put my money where my mouth is and say that I think we'll come out victorious this time.
Well, I hope you do because I know everything that state went through, but I've just got a visceral dislike for LSU. I just do. and frankly, this season's been very frustrating because I've said all along that that they weren't the best. They certainly I think they're in the game by default. You couldn't put Georgia in against OSU because Georgia didn't even win its own division, let alone its conference. You couldn't put Kansas in for the same reasons. Oklahoma, no. I mean, they won their conference, but you know, look at who they lost to. And LSU comes in by default by virtue of the fact that its two losses came in overtime situations under the supposed extreme duress conditions. It's almost like they didn't really lose those two games.
I know that. I'll have to use the same defense. A friend of mine called me early Sunday morning and says, "Well, your Buckeyes backed into the national championship game," and I said, "Well, that may be, Gene, but let me say something here. The operative word is in."
Yeah. Whether you back in or you pull in, you get to park one way or the other.
Yeah. And you know, the BCS has its weaknesses, and we're probably suffering through some of them right now. But it is what it is. We got what we got, and I love it at Morgantown. I've been there for games, and I felt the pain for the Nears the other night. I really did.
Well, I appreciate it because it was an awful sinking sick sensation. You know what, though, Guy, to tell you the truth, if you watch the game, I got my first dose of "Oh my God, what's going on here." When early on we drove down to the pit two and elected to kick a field goal from a really bad angle.
Yeah.
And then we tried to take the delay of game, and Dave Wannstedt declined the penalty, and we missed the field goal. Let's transfer this over to Michigan. When you have driven down to Michigan's two and your Ohio State.
That's a healthy word, Bob.
I know, but I'm just trying to But when you've got the ball on your most hated rival's two, and it's fourth and goal, I think the entire momentum of the game turns on getting your boot on their neck and grinding early. Because what we showed them by going for that field goal is that we were afraid of them, and that we valued 3 points more than an opportunity to break them right then and there.
It reminds me of a game I was at back in the mid-70s. I can't remember exactly what year it was, right around 1973, 74, when we were playing our hated rival Michigan, and Bo Schembechler was the coach, God rest his soul. And four times, and the Buckeyes came out victorious that day after getting terribly outplayed by the Wolverines, and four times the Michigan Wolverines were inside the 5-yard line and went for it every time, four and out. and couldn't score a touchdown. And they asked Bo Schembechler about it after the game, and he said, I'm not going to be inside my rival's five-yard line and kick a field goal. I'm going for the touchdown. And it didn't work. He was going for the throat as well and couldn't pull it off that day. But I know exactly what you're talking about. It's a shame for all the Mountaineer fans. It really is.
Well, it is, and that's not to say that the Fiesta Bowl is some sort of consolation prize. It's not.
Yeah, it's not chopped liver. No.
You know, I feel bad for Rich Rodriguez. He's missing out on something on the order of a $100,000 bonus this year on his paycheck for not being in the national championship. But the other side, and I am always desperate to make lemonade out of lemons, is that this is almost a guarantee that Slayton and White will both be back for their senior season.
Mm-hmm.
Slayton was going to put papers in to see where he'd go in the draft, but you know, when you've got 10 carries for 4 yards in your rivalry game, I'm guessing the NFL scouts aren't just going to be beating down your door.
No, and you know, you got a bright future. You've got one of our local kids there on your team, Noel Devine. I think if he stays on the straight and narrow, he's probably got a great.
My God, what a set of legs that young man has!
Yes, he is. He's a local boy from here, Fort Myers area.
They asked him after the UConn game where he ran wild and had like 118 yards on 11 carries. Guy, one of those genius sports reporters, and you know what idiots these people are. They walk up to an 18-year-old man, and they say, how would you describe your running style? Bless his heart, Noel Devine looked at this moron and said, fast.
Yeah. Yeah, just run faster than the other guy. That's what I try and do. Yes. Well, it's always fun to take a break from serious things in life.
Well, it is, and it would not be fair if because you weren't on the air today, and that probably meant that you were sitting around, you know, sort of chewing the inside of your mouth. Do you just want to throw a brick through a window when you see things like this story out of the Times today about the fact that our entire intelligence community says that Iran hasn't been working on a bomb since 2003, isn't working on a bomb since 2003, and you know the administration's been out there saying the exact opposite, knowing full well what was in the report the whole time? Do you just want to scream?
And yet you would be hard-pressed to convince anybody in the audience of a Hannity or the drug junkie Limbaugh tonight if they have heard it, they wouldn't accept it anyway. It's amazing how ill-informed is or how coerced they are and manipulated by the right-wing media. I want to throw a brick every time I hear that liberal media mantra. The public is convinced, and I would say even tonight after this story came out, you could go and interview all those folks, and they would all say, oh, no, they've got that new gun stove right now cooking that baby up, don't you worry, and we need to bomb them.
Well, do you think this slows down or defeats at all the likelihood, because I've been convinced for some time, Guy, that we're going to wind up bombing Iran. Do you think this puts a spoke or a stick in the spokes at all?
It may, Bob, but it may only slow them down from 90 miles an hour to 88. They don't seem to pay attention. I mean, when you stop and think of the chutzpah these people have, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the story today that you know, Wolfowitz has been rehired.
Yeah.
It's just smack in your face, and I really don't think they care at all. And furthermore, I don't think they care about their Republican candidates running. I don't think this Bush administration gives a damn if what happens to their political fortunes. He's going to do what he's going to do, come hell or high water, and that's it. And he doesn't care what they think, what we think. He doesn't care what anybody thinks.
Yeah, because come hell or high water, it's Jeb in 2012 at the very latest.
Absolutely.
That's their goal. It's not a Republican agenda, Guy. It's a Bush family agenda.
Absolutely. I've said, and I know you've said many times, I don't have, well, yes, I mean, I have, but I don't have any screaming quarrel with real Republicans. I mean, we've got our political differences. It's these people that I'm worried about. It's a completely different animal.
These people want a political dynasty that will rule this continent forevermore. And you cannot convince me, Guy, that when they sit down for one of their much ballyhooed, bloody-fisted, punch-in-the-face cricket matches at Kenny or croquet matches at Kenny Bunkport, that they don't sit back and say, look, it's Jeb in 2012, And, you know, by 2020 or so, we'll have Petey or Poppy or whichever one of the children is ready to go. They're plotting out a long-term strategy.
Absolutely. I completely agree that that's what it's about. It's not about Republicanism. It's about Bushism, period.
And that's dangerous because that's a cult of personality no less than Mao.
Yeah, and yet you know I was heading for the doctor this afternoon, had the radio on, and I'm hearing Hannity accuse the Democrats of being Stalinist. That's the first time I think I've heard him actually call it Stalinist. And here we've got what we've got in the White House right now. Oh man, it's a crazy world, Bob.
It is, and you know all we can do is be there and try to talk a little sanity for the few hours of the day that we get, Guy. And I'm glad you're there. I'm glad everybody on the horn is here, because as long as we're here and we're talking, we've got a chance. It's when complete silence takes over that we know that we're done. And they think that they've got complete domination because they own the terrestrial airwaves. But you know what we're doing, what the horn's doing, what you're doing, Guy. This is radio for the rest of the century. And this is where 20-year-olds are going to come, and the teenagers that are coming up now. My eldest is 20, the next one down is 13, and they don't think about they don't know that there are antennas that can bring in the signals. Their media comes from the internet, and at the very worst, cable.
Yeah, yes, I agree. We may be the way ahead of its time. but our time's coming, and it's we're on the cusp here, and it is important work.
And all we have to do is hang on for dear life.
That's right. The fingernails get a little shorter all the time, but hanging on to the life.
You still got fingernails? I'm impressed.
Yeah. But we got to keep hanging on. That's what we do, and it would be a good time to mention that the horn can certainly use everybody's support. Do keep in mind that
we run two studios. You run a studio that you pay for, and you're contributor supported. We're contributor supported on this end, and every dime that comes in goes to keep on making it happening, Guy, on your end and my end, and we both know that.
Well, it's especially important to mention that in this year when I've mentioned the show before that the candidates and the get out the vote folks are sucking up all the money, and people do have to keep in mind if you want a real progressive liberal media, why you're going to have to help out with it.
Yeah, because the candidates and the traditional media are not going to be giving out any goodies.
No,
they're not. Well, Guy, I wish you a very good week. I'm looking forward to your show tomorrow. Anything special on tap, or is it too early to make that call?
Oh, I know I'm going to have to, by the avalanche of email I got, I'm going to have to talk about a little bit about the IMUS situation. like that's terribly important. And also, we've got an open letter to Mr. Pat Roberts now that he's the moral leader on the right and has thrown his support behind one of the most moral men I've ever known to run for the office, Mr. Rudolph Giuliani. We want to talk about that association a little bit tomorrow, so it should be interesting.
All right. Well, Guy James, thank you very much, and thank you for your commiseration. I actually feel considerably better now.
Well, Bob, when you got knocked off the perch as a football fan as much as we Buckeyes have, and we've been knocked off of it, and we know your pain, we know how you feel, and don't worry, the Nears will be back. Nice to talk to you, Bob.
All right. You take care, Guy. Bye now. Guy James, who will be back with his Guy James show tomorrow afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time. You've heard from the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James and the Head On Radio Network. If you're on hold, please stay that way. We will come to you out of the news. I haven't seen you guys light it up like this in a while. And go ahead, fire it on up. You know the number, 304-658-3333, or if you need us to carry the freight, toll free, 877-443-2366. You're listening to listener-supported independent, liberal conversation radio. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be back after the news.
I can't blame you. It's a shame you can't cover your ass sometimes. It's that kind of town, and you're so far down you can't get up. And I can't tell you what to say.
This is the Quality News Network. The world's largest conference ever on climate change opened this morning in Bali, Indonesia. The two-week UN summit has attracted more than 10,000 attendees from 190 countries. Key discussions cover how best to reduce greenhouse gas emissions after the current Kyoto Protocol targets expire in 2012. As promised, Australia new Prime Minister's first official act was to ratify the Kyoto Protocol. Kevin Rudd took office today. A new U.S. intelligence report conflicts with the Bush administration view concerning Iran's nuclear weapons program. The National Intelligence Estimate released today indicates that Tehran's nuclear weapons program was stopped back in 2003 and currently remains on hold. The report concludes that they don't know if Iran intends to develop nuclear weapons for future use. The political party of Russian President Vladimir Putin won more than 60% of the national vote. That means when term limits force Putin to step down early next year, he may stay in power by being appointed prime minister. The Russian election was judged unfair by the world's major election monitoring group based in Brussels. Organization said the election was held on an unfair playing field. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez's proposal to suspend term limits so that he could rule his country indefinitely turned down today at the ballot box. At least five people were killed, three wounded, when a backpack bomb exploded this morning in an Islamic school on the border of Pakistan and Afghanistan. Iraqi troops discovered a mass grave with the remains of a dozen people, including a paramedic who disappeared more than a year ago. It is the latest grisly find at a former stronghold of al-Qaeda in Iraq, about 60 miles north of Baghdad. Under intense international pressure, Sudan's president has pardoned the British schoolteacher imprisoned for allowing her 7-year-old students to name a teddy bear Mohammed. The 54-year-old teacher will be escorted out of Africa later this afternoon. And a man accused of taking hostages at a Hillary Clinton campaign office last week, arraigned today in Rochester, New Hampshire, 46-year-old Leland Eisenberg, is being charged with 6 felony counts. He's ordered held on a $500,000 bail. The judge also ordered a psychiatric evaluation. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, "We must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of a good light." This is the essence of civility. When we are civil to strangers, when we defer at the intersection instead of racing out ahead, when we hold the door for someone we don't know, when we smile at someone who catches our eye, we declare our choice for a civilized society. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Across the Midwest and Northeast, snow, wind, and freezing temperatures have resulted in the deaths of at least 11 people. Some roads and schools are closed. Power outages are widespread. A government panel today will release a report that says the FDA is so underfunded, the American public is endangered. The federal agency regulates a full 80% of all food and medicine sold in the U.S. Dell Computers has consolidated its entire advertising budget, awarding the contract to British firm WPP. The deal is worth $4.5 billion over the next 3 years. CNN sponsored a study to rank 13 hybrid vehicles in terms of cost efficiency. The top three are the Toyota Prius, Chevy Malibu, and Toyota Camry. The bottom three, both of the Lexus hybrids and the Toyota Highlander. NASDAQ opened an office in Beijing today for the first time. Officials say they aim to attract more Chinese firms to the stock exchange. Light sweet crude oil trading at $89.31 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold trading at $794.70 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 57 points to end at 13,314. The NASDAQ down nearly 24 points. S&P 500 off 8. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty then. 8 minutes past the hour. And a program note for you, I have not seen the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation host, Peter Godbold, in the chat room this evening. Let me make a quick drive-by. Nope. So I'm guessing that it may be highly unlikely that we will have an edition of, a live edition, brand new edition, of Strictly Confidential this evening. If we do, it'll be great. If we don't, well, it's mainly because the internet infrastructure in the area in which Peter lives is occasionally comparable to two tin cans, two dented tomato soup cans, and a string with a lot of rust. Had an email from Peter earlier saying that he was getting, at best, dial-up speeds, and the last email I got from him was actually from dial-up, so that means he's pretty well crippled, I'm guessing, and that his provider has not been able to get it fixed. Oddly enough, it's not his provider that's the problem, it's the telephone system. Why is it always that way? You know, if you recall, we lost a few hours of programming a while back when the fine folks at Verizon sent a bunch of juice down their lines and fried our great big Internet Exchange box or whatever the darn thing's called. Just gone. And it wasn't my provider's problem. It was the giant telecoms problem. Yeah. So, no, that we may not have a live Strictly Confidential for you this evening. I have not heard from, I assume that we're still go for a brand new fresh installment of All Foxed Up coming your way at midnight. And, you know, I can probably do an hour of the horn section by myself if I have to. I really like the horn section, and I think it's a great good time. I enjoyed picking Rick Goodner's brain Friday night. That was just a whale of a lot of fun. Now, where do we go? Well, let's see. Pot Meat Kettle. Dear Leader came out today and gave hell to Congress, especially the Senate, because the Senate used a procedural maneuver to keep him from doing any more of his sleazy little back alley recess appointments. He said, in a political maneuver designed to block my ability to make recess appointments, congressional leaders arranged for a senator to come in every 3 days or so, bang a gavel, wait for about 30 seconds, bang a gavel again, and then leave. Under the Senate rules, this counts as a full day. If 30 seconds is a full day, no wonder Congress has got a lot of work to do. George, buddy, I don't know if anybody's mentioned this to you, but you hold the vacation record for presidents of the United States, pal. You've spent more time in Crawford, Texas than most in the first year of your presidency than most presidents spend away from the Oval Office in an entire term, buddy. And this was all because he has he being that jug-eared, pig-eyed little lout that's occupying the White House, he has repeatedly used recess appointments with a propensity unlike that of any other previous president to put reactionaries and ideologues into office who had no business either politically or for reasons of basic competence being on the job. Let's see, what else did he do? He criticized Democrats' continued efforts to end the war in Iraq. Not a lot there to criticize there, George, buddy. I mean, you've gotten more money than you could use to burn a wet elephant for your filthy, stinking little war. He reiterated threats made by Defense Secretary Robert Gates that a failure to get war funds would force the Pentagon to soon begin sending out layoff notices. To whom? It's time to call a bluff. Who is it that's getting laid off at the Pentagon? The Office of Civilian Bombing? Are they going to have to be laid off? How about the Office of Civilian Body Counts? Oh, wait, there ain't one! Are they going to have to lay off the people who unload our dead from Iraq with forklifts in cardboard boxes? Yeah, that was real. That really did happen. Is that who's going to get laid off? I mean, they're not going to lay off Robert Gates now, are they? They're not going to cut his salary. Oh, no. No, no. He'll make that long walk to the mailbox every 30 days or every 14 days, 15 days, whatever it takes. Robert Gates isn't. So what this means is that maybe some of these people who are drawing their breath and their pay at the same time might actually have to work. The president also called on Congress, according to this published report from The Hill. Also called on Congress to pass a permanent update to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that is to his liking. We are not amused. A fix to shield taxpayers from the alternative minimum tax and the bulk of fiscal year 2008 spending bills that remain undone. George, a lot of us aren't interested in passing telecom immunity bills. We're just not. Because we've seen what you do when you're given even the tiniest little bit of power. Oh, and just so you'll know, the Center for Constitutional Rights has produced an ad. Susan referred to this earlier. They produced an ad that criticizes the Bush administration for, and this is a quote, destroying the Constitution. How? Well, by renditions, by torture, waterboarding, great big piles of human flesh at Abu Ghraib, that kind of thing. The ad is called Rescue the Constitution. It's narrated by actor Danny Glover. Now, a Fox News account executive here we go. Let's check the ad out. Let's get this right. Here we go.
Some of these individuals are taken to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
And have a fairly robust interrogation program without torture.
The Constitution doesn't say every citizen is hereby granted the right to do this. It doesn't say that.
The United States does not torture. It's against our laws and it's against our values.
No trials, renditions, torture. The Bush administration is destroying the Constitution. They can be stopped. Rescue the Constitution.
Now, for those of you who want to follow up on it, there is a website. And that website is this is the curse of dealing with new media. All right, we'll just run it again and read the website when it comes up. But it relates to December 5th, which is 2 days from now. And, of course, Fox in general, wanted nothing to do with this ad. A bought and paid for ad. All money is equal. Some money is more equal, of course, than other money. December 5th, Supreme Court, Beyond Guantanamo, beyondguantanamo.org. There it is, beyondguantanamo.org. Give them a hit. The Center for Constitutional Rights provided an email that came from Fox News, an account executive by the name of Aaron Kelly. Aaron Kelly told Owen Henkel, the center's e-communications manager, that Fox wouldn't run the ad. The email reads as follows. Hi, Owen. We cannot approve the spot with it being Danny Glover's opinion that the Bush administration is destroying the Constitution. If you have documentation that it is indeed being destroyed, we can look at that. Sorry about that.
Aaron.
Of course, a couple of years ago, Fox also refused to run an ad that would have criticized Dear Leader's choice of that filthy little beady-eyed perjurer, Sammy Alito, for the Supreme Court.
If you have documentation that Judge Bush is indeed destroying the Constitution, we'd look at that.
You stupid twit. It's not Danny Glover's opinion. How far up the chain of command did you have to go, Aaron, honey, before they came up with that one for you?
It's just Danny Glover's opinion, you know.
It's not Danny Glover's opinion. The ad, and, you know, let's check it out just to be fair about all of this. What's it say? Here we go.
Some of these individuals are taken to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba.
Why, those are George Bush's words.
Interrogation program.
Those are Cheney's words.
The Constitution doesn't say every citizen is hereby granted the right to pay this.
That sounds like Fredo Gonzalez.
It's not torture. It's against our laws and it's against our values.
There's Bush.
No trials, renditions, torture. The Bush administration is destroying the Constitution. They can be stopped. Rescue the Constitution.
You know, I had no idea that this advertisement was coming out. But was it Friday or was it Thursday that I suggested that we are not engaged in an opposition to the Bush administration? We are engaged in nothing short of a constitutional restoration movement, of a movement designed to restore the basic tenets and values of this republic that was put together by patriots, put together by men who were otherwise short-sighted in some ways, slavery, for instance, women's suffrage, for instance. Women is anything but, you know, property of men, for instance. But that the republic was put together in good faith by brilliant men, liberals, progressive men, and that it was held together with nothing short of human blood and bone and gristle and sinew. Time after time after time. And now, well, that republic, what Ben Franklin say, what kind of government did you give us, Ben? And he said, the republic, if you can keep it. That republic is under attack. As sure as God made little green apples, the republic is under attack. And we are involved in an effort to restore the republic. Certainly no less than, and quite possibly more than, the effort to restore the Roman Republic when Cato and several others rebelled against the dictatorship of Julius Caesar. Speaking of which, our blogger, Texas Betsy, sent along a fascinating editorial from the New York Times today. The writer is a man named Harry Mount, and the title of it is A Vote for Latin. And he writes, at first glance, it doesn't seem tragic that our leaders don't study Latin anymore. But it is no coincidence that professionalization of politics, which encourages budding politicians to think of education as mere career preparation, has occurred during an age of weak rhetoric, shifting moral values, clumsy grammar, and a terror of historical references and eternal values that the Romans could teach us a thing or two about, as they themselves might have said Roma Urbs Aeterna, Latina Lingua Aeterna. None of the leading presidential candidates majored in Latin. Hillary Clinton studied political science at Wellesley, as did Barack Obama at Columbia. Rudy Giuliani had a minor brush with the language during 4 years of theology at Bishop Laughlin Memorial High School in Brooklyn when he toyed with becoming a priest. Bad choice of language, Mr. Mount. Toyed with becoming. Maybe he got toyed with by a priest. Maybe that's the problem. But then he went on to major in, guess what? That's right, political science. Mr. Mount writes, how things have changed since the Founding Fathers. And he points out, of the 7,000 books originally in Thomas Jefferson's library, only a couple of dozen are still at Monticello. The rest were sold off by his descendants and eventually bought back by the Library of Congress, the best thumbed of those remaining. On a glassed-in shelf in Jefferson's study is a copy of Virgil's Aeneid. He points out a truism of Jefferson's education that is probably similar to most of the learned class's educational basis for that era. Jefferson started learning Latin and Greek at age 9 at a school in Virginia run by a Scottish clergyman. When he was at the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg, a Greek grammar book was always by his side. Tacitus and Homer were his favorites. High school, Jefferson thought, should center on Latin, Greek, and French, with grammar and reading exercises, translations into English, and the memorizing of famous passages. In 1819, when Jefferson opened the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, he employed only classically trained professors to teach Greek and Roman history. And that is the pattern of American education for some 150 years, to the point that a woman who once upon a time was just a little hillbilly girl could look at her little son, 2 and 3 years old, and whisper the opening lines of Caesar's Gallic Wars, to the point that the little boy would say, "Mama, what's that?" And she'd say, "That's Latin, son. You'll learn it someday." And he did, and I'm him. And that was my mama. Taught Latin by a man named Prof. Skaggs, whom she adored, because he was an educator of the first order. My father, who in his senior year of high school left and worked part-time to buy war bonds by hauling freight at the local Kroger and by working in the mines as well, also had Latin under Prof. Skaggs. And this was an educational system that never imagined that either of those two individuals would do anything more than get through high school and she begin raising children and he begin work in the mines. But somewhere along the way, some professional, some educator, thought that it was probably well that these people who were deemed nothing more than the working class should have a classical education. Yeah, Gene, amazing, ain't it? Our founding fathers didn't believe in English-only education. Somebody call Tom Tancredo! Bill Clinton's particular favorite during his 4 years of Latin at Hot Springs High School in Arkansas were Caesar's Gallic Wars. Galliae Domnis Divisae in Partes Tres. The whole of Gaul is divided into three parts. A simple little statement, but one that begins an absolutely fascinating egomaniacal journey through the eyes of a man who dreamed of ruling the world. Now, there is hope, because Mr. Mount notes that by 1977, a mere 6,000 students took the National Latin Exam. In 2005, those taking the National Latin Exam, that number rose to 134,873. That is a good thing. Because hopefully, if you're learning Latin, you're learning, or your kids or your grandkids, They're not just learning how to decline nouns and conjugate verbs. You know, I'd rather decline three drinks than one Latin adjective, Mark Twain. You're reading what they had to say about their human experience. It all matters. It is all relevant. And it's not just Latin, it's Greek. And it's not just Greek, it's ancient Persian. It's the observations contained in the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. Language stretches the mind. Ancient languages prove that there truly is nothing new under the sun. As Mr. Mount puts it, what students gain is a glimpse into the past that provides a fuller, richer view of the present. Know Latin, and you discern the Roman layer that lies beneath the skin of the Western world, and you open up 500 years of Western literature plus an additional 1,000 years of Latin prose and poetry. Learn Latin, and maybe you have to learn to read the tortured, and I do mean tortured, construction of Cicero. And you read about the prosecution that I've mentioned on this show a number of times, the prosecution of Verus, where Cicero turned the prosecutorial process on its head. When everyone said it wouldn't be possible to convict Verus, Cicero did. Just like those who say, well, you know, it's too late for impeachment. No, it isn't. Not for those who are willing to look at it from every angle and from new angles, to step outside and look at it from underneath and above and around. Because even though there's news out today that, lo and behold, Dick Cheney has known for years that the United States is not threatened by an atomic Iran. George Bush has known for years that Iran is not working on a bomb, just as, oddly enough, Ahmadinejad has said. Even though they've known all that, they've come out and they've lied to the American people in statements far more dangerous to the Republic than, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. Those lies are impeachable offenses, but people say, oh, well, you know, we can't do that because, you know, it's too late. It's too complicated. Somebody who studies Latin knows that that's not true. Mr. Mount says, with a little Roman history and Latin under your belt, you end up seeing more everywhere, not only in literature and language, but in the classical roots of federal architecture, the spread of Christianity throughout Western Europe, and in turn America, and in the American system of senatorial government. The novelist Alan Hollingshurst describes people who know history's turning points as being able to look at the world as a sequence of rooms. Greece gives way to Rome, Rome to the Byzantine Empire, to the Renaissance, to the British Empire, to America. Mr. Mount wrote a book called Carpe Diem, Put a Little Latin in Your Life. I agree with him. And yet, the sad thing is, here where I live, my children will not have that opportunity. Because the people who made a determination that even working class people deserve a classical education, they are long cold in their graves. And it's the same sort of decision making that is forced upon educational systems all over the United States. Not just here in West Virginia, not just here in the hills, but all over. Yeah, the numbers of people taking the National Latin Exam are rising, but that's still a fraction, a bare fraction of the people who could be taking it, could be learning from it. And the question you have to ask yourself is there a segment of our upper echelon that prefers that working class people not learn things like Latin and Greek? I never did get my Greek, and I consider that a great loss on my part. by virtue of self-study and autodidacticism, I can dope out a few words here and there. I'm really terrible with the minuscules. But I can dope out a few words here, and I understand, by virtue of Latin, I understand the nature of declining nouns and conjugated verbs and inflected language. And I can piece together a little bit of it, but not enough to sit down and read a, you know, read a smattering of Homer in the original ancient beautiful Greek. I don't know, maybe someday I'll make a project of that. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays I'll work on my Carlos Santana guitar solos, and Tuesdays and Thursdays I'll work on my ancient Greek. That's when I've got nothing, you know, nothing else to do. But it is, you know, is this something you think about? How did your educational experience compare with the educational experience you perceive from younger folk today? You know, we've got a teenage listener who occasionally pops into the chat room, and I think I talked her into actually signing up for Latin because they offered it where she went to school. And I hope it's working out nicely for her, because it, take that, go on to Greek. I'm an internet geek. We all understand that now, right? I mean, one of the things I love best about the internet is that it is an opportunity to indulge one's wildest fantasies on the slightest whim. And no, I'm not talking about going to www.sexhangingfromachandelier.com. I got curious last night because I was watching a video from Iran with their, I guess, army chief of staff. And he was talking about how they would oppose the United States, yada, yada, yada. But because I'm a bit of a, oh, I don't know, easily distracted person, I noticed that the numbering for the video counter, the tape counter, whatever, looked like it was written in Klingon, and I realized I was looking at Persian numerals. So I can say today that I can read numerals in Persian now, because I ran off to a website that turned out to be from the University of Texas at Austin, and it had cute little math problems. First, they taught you what the numerals were for 0 through 9, and then they gave you little math problems, little addition and subtraction problems, and you had to type in the answer. And so, you know, I learned Persian numerals. Now, this does not by any means qualify me to translate, as I mentioned earlier, the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam or anything like that. But it was a, you know, just a little brain stretcher, little brain teaser. I went wandering off after that to look at Google Earth, because recognizing that I will probably never travel to any small portion of the places I would dearly love to see, I have to do it via satellite imagery, like probably millions of other people. And I wandered off, and I went and I looked at Susa in Iran, and I looked at Persepolis in Iran, and I looked at Pasargada in Iran, and there were you know how Google Earth works. There's all kinds of photographs there. I looked at the photographs that people have taken and embedded there on the maps, and wow, what I wouldn't give to wander around those ruins. If you couldn't feel the If you couldn't feel the compressed time just all around you, there'd have to be something desperately wrong. The mausoleum of Cyrus the Great that was saved from destruction by the invading 8th, 6th, or 7th, or 8th century Muslims, whoever they were, because somebody came to them and lied to them and said, "Oh, no, that's not Cyrus's mausoleum. That's the mother of Solomon." "Oh, okay. That is holy. We will not tear it down." Sheesh. But it's absolutely fascinating to look at, because then I wandered over and I had a look at the satellite images of Babylon sitting hard by the river. And I saw massive trailer trucks parked on that ancient site. I saw Black Hawk helicopters. You know, they're there for the seeing. Ours, no one else's. I remembered how American soldiers spray-painted Semper Fi. United States Marines painted Semper Fi, F-E, since we're getting back to our little Latin lesson. Any Marine can tell you that Semper Fidelis means always faithful. And it's shortened to Semper, S-E-M-P-E-R, F-I. This joker had spray-painted Semper F-E on the Ishtar Gate of Babylon. I read up on reports that indicated that the vibrations coming from the Black Hawk helicopters had destroyed the foundations of one ancient building and caused it to crumble. I read another account that mentioned the fact that entrenching around the site of ancient Babylon had admixed about, 40 centuries worth of archaeological data that would never be entangled. Untangled, I should say. And so, having looked at the destruction of Babylon, or the redestruction of Babylon, I guess would be the best way to put it, I then went back and I looked at Persepolis. You know, Alexander the Great destroyed Persepolis, but there's a little bit left. And I realized that if it comes to it, we will have no compunction against destroying that. And I looked at Susa and realized that, and that sits in Bushehr province, which is one of the provinces that we're going to bomb the snot out of if we do start the war, if the people of the United States let that war get started. I looked at Susa, which was another ancient capital of the Persians. You know, people describe the Persian language just as this is just pure trivia, and I hope you don't mind it. It's called generally Farsi, F-A-R-S-I. You know why it's called Farsi? The Persians, being a non-Arabic, non-Semitic people, they called it originally Parsi, P-A-R-S-I, Parsi. But the Arabs cannot pronounce the letter P. They have no letter P, so they changed it over to F, much as in the West, we changed Julius Caesar to Julius Caesar. So Parsi and the Parsians, the Persians, are that neck of the woods. And in looking at their capitals, be they Susa or Persepolis, to look at the burial grounds, their ancient burial grounds at Pasargada, I realized that we will not have any compunction whatsoever against destroying that chunk of the common patrimony of, and Matt, you know what I mean. I'm not trying to be genderist or whatever. Our common heritage, our common inheritance as occupants of this sweet little blue-green time machine that's hurtling through time and space in the universe. we will have no compunction against reducing it to utter dust. See how my mind works? Isn't it disturbing? Now, of course, you heard that the woman in Sudan has been pardoned by the president of Sudan. And I suppose that's a great victory. Beats the dickens out of having the skin flayed off that woman's back, regardless of what you think of her. I don't think poorly of her. But in the course of wandering around, I found a video link from a TV program broadcast in Lebanon. You're going to find this utterly fascinating. It is a cleric from Saudi Arabia explaining how women are to be treated. Saudi cleric Muhammad al-Arifi explains wife-beating in Islam to young Muslims in a show that was run during Ramadan. Men beat women more often. I said that some women beat their husbands because this happens, but it is rare. And there is no need to hold conferences on wives who beat their husbands. I believe this is less prevalent because by nature the body of the man, in most cases, Allah made the body of men stronger than the body of women. Therefore, you and your sister, yeah, you may be taller than your mother, right? If your mother is ill, you may be able to carry her, but she cannot carry you. Well, she's sick, isn't she? Allah created women with these delicate, fragile, supple, and soft bodies because they use their emotions more than they use their bodies. Therefore, while the man may use beating to discipline his wife, she sometimes uses her tears to discipline him. He gets what he wants by screaming, while she gets what she wants from him by crying. For men, women's emotions may be fiercer than the strike of a sword. Oh, stop it. First, admonish them. Once, twice, three times, four times, 10 times. If this doesn't help, refuse to share their beds. In such a case, the husband does not sleep with the wife, or in other words, he withholds sex from her. He gives her the silent treatment, refusing to talk to her. If he comes to eat and she asks him, "How are you?" he doesn't answer. If she asks him, "Do you want anything?" he doesn't answer. He distances himself from her in bed and in conversation. He does not sleep with her, but goes to sleep in another room. He shows her that he is angry with her. If this does not help, if the admonishing did no good, and when he goes to sleep in another room, she says, "Thank God he's gone. Now I've got the bed to myself. I will sleep alone and in bed and roll over at night and not hit anybody." If neither, what is the third option? Beat them. That's right. How is this beating performed? What do you think? No, light beatings. Light beatings in what way? Well, for example, I wouldn't beat her in the face. Beating in the face is forbidden even when it comes to animals. When a person is beating an animal, even if you want your camel or donkey to start walking, you are not allowed to beat it in the face. If this is true for animals, it is all the more true when it comes to humans. So beatings should be light and not in the face. Some religious scholars say he should beat her with a toothpick. I happen to have a toothpick with me. A man who is angry with his wife, if he says to her, "Watch out, the child has fallen next to the stove," or "Move the child away from the electrical socket," and she says, "I'm busy," then he beats her with a toothpick or something like it. He doesn't beat her with a bottle of water, a plate, or a knife. Oh, just wait a minute. What I'm reading to you, know, you hear the guy babbling on. I'm reading you the translation from the video. If a man says, "The kid's too close to the stove, watch out," and she says, "I'm busy," man, get off thy lazy duff and go and save the child. I mean, I'm sorry, that kind of makes it. Or if he says, The child is going to put his finger in the light socket, and she says, I'm too busy. Then, man, put one foot in front of the other quickly and go pull the child away from the damn light socket. I'm surprised you have electricity, USOB. Okay, where was... Oh, yes. He beats her with a toothpick. By the way, this I know, we're dancing about architecture because I'm talking about a video. But the guy reaches into his bedsheet and pulls out a six-inch stick. I happen to have a toothpick with me, he says. And he pulls out this stick and he says, he doesn't beat her with a bottle of water, a plate, or a knife. This is forbidden. The scholar said he should beat her with a toothpick. Check out how gentle the toothpick used for beating is. This shows you that the purpose is not to inflict pain. When you beat an animal, you intend to cause it pain so it will obey you. Because an animal would not understand if you said, oh, camel, come on, start moving. Notice the comparison here. He's setting up a distinction between camels, donkeys, and females. Female humans, that is. The camel does not understand such things unless you beat it. A donkey understands nothing but beatings, but a woman, a man, a child, and so on are generally more affected by emotions than by other things. If you beat her with a toothpick, or if you beat her lightly with your hand and so on, it is meant to convey, woman, it has gone too far, I can't bear it anymore. If he beats her, the beatings must be light and must not make her face ugly. How the hell are we supposed to know he keeps her under a beekeeper's suit anyway? He must beat her where it will not leave marks. He should not beat her on her head. He should not beat her in some places where it will not... He should beat her in places where it will not cause some damage. He should not beat her like he would beat an animal or a child. An animal or a child. Slapping them right and left. Unfortunately, many husbands beat their wives only when they get mad. Meaning they should beat their wives when they're happy? Wow. And when they start beating, it is as if they are punching a wall. Well, that's basically how your culture treats women. They're furniture. They're property, right, buddy? They beat with their hands right and left and sometimes use their feet. Brother, it is a human being you are beating. This is forbidden. He must not do this. Wow. You see why we've got a problem? We're in bed with these people. These people who draw distinctions between a little bit of beating and a lot of beating. You know, there's good beating and bad beating. Because, you see, they're barbarians. I don't say that because of their religion. I say that because of their culture. They are barbarians. Now, once upon a time, they made great advances in science and technology and philosophy and learning and poetry. But they have abandoned that for religious fundamentalism. Now, I did that for a reason. I ran you that audio for a reason. The reason being, compare that with, what was it, Christian domestic discipline? When you sit right down and you start doing the comparisons, honest to Pete, how much difference is there between a Christian fundamentalist and a Muslim fundamentalist? For instance, it's fairly well accepted that Fred Phelps and his sect, that he routinely meted out brutal corporal discipline on both his spouse and his children. How much difference is there in him and the goober with the toothpick in the video there that I was reading to you from? I submit to you that there is not a whit of difference. Fundamentalism is poison in whatever form it takes. Every form of fundamentalism is as evil as any other form. Please comprehend this. It is so very important. It is not about Islam. It is not about Christianity. It is not about Judaism or Jainism or Hinduism or any or Buddhism or any other ism. It is about what happens when people take it literally and fundamentally and read its mythology as if it were settled natural law. Then you can have perfectly sane conversations or sane sounding conversations about how much one might beat one's wife. Now, I watched the video there, and I couldn't help noticing that dude's wife was not present to discuss whether or not he beats her with a toothpick or a razor strop. That's because, being female in that culture, she is something just south of garbage. Don't beat her on the... Well, you know, she gets to take the beekeeper suit off at home, and he doesn't want to look over and see her all purple in the face or anything from where he punched her lights out the night before for serving him a cold plate of falafel. So he'll beat her ass, or her lower back, or the backs of her thighs. You know, where the nerve endings are especially receptive. The front end of that video is particularly disgusting in its sexism because it says, you know, it's the same. And again, in Arabic, apparently they make the same arguments that bigoted males make in English. Well, you know, I mean, I hit her and stuff, but you don't know how much browbeating I... That woman nags me to death. Nag, 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 nag. And sometimes I just get where I can't take it no more and I backhand her. I submit to you that that sentence that I just breathed life into would translate word for word into Arabic. And many, many other languages. Like that sick old joke about, I'm not even going to tell it because it's disgusting. It's not the religion. It's the culture the religion is in. And it's the culture the religion is in that allows its adherents to take as fundamentally, literally true every stinking word in the holy book. In the course of my readings last night, I came across the story of the birth and survival of Sargon the Great. He was the great unifier of the Akkad people in Mesopotamia. One of his birth myths suggests that when he was born, wait a minute, tell me if you've heard this. When Sargon was born, in order to protect him from death, his mother filled a reed basket, lined a reed basket with pitch to make it waterproof, wrapped the baby up and put him in the basket and floated him down the Euphrates River until he was found by a kindly farmer who raised him as his own. Eventually, Sargon went on to become the cupbearer to the king of Kish. I know, you're scratching your head. You thought that was the Moses story. But no, like everything else in that book, it's plagiarized. It's ripped off from earlier myth. It just is. So, wow, we started out with Latin and we wound up with Sargon. Tell me another anywhere, another radio show where you can get this kind of stuff. name one. Because I would submit that you can't. I'm not saying that I'm anything special or Wile E. Coyote super genius or anything. But, well, commercial radio just doesn't admit of such stuff as that. We'll be back after the news. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, listener supported. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm Bob Kincaid, who can't get his bumper music to play, who's getting more and more frustrated, because he had just the very song for going out after this discussion. Oh, curse you, Bill Gates. Curse you. Well, darn it. I guess we're not going to have that. No, this program's not responding. Now it is. There we go. See, I told you it was the perfect bumper. Well, I'll be damned. I've never had an MP3 file with a skip in it before. Huh? Yeah, I know. It had to shut down. We're just completely off the rails. Must be God getting me back. I need a drink. We'll be back after the news.
If you really want to know, she comes here a lot. She just loves to hear the music and dance. K-13 is her favorite song. If you play it, you might have a chance. Tonight she's only sipping white wine. She's friendly and fun-loving most of the time. But don't ask her on a straight tequila night. She'll start thinking about him, and she's ready to fight. Blames her broken heart on every man inside. On a straight tequila night. Here's a glass of Chablis and some quarters and change. Maybe you can turn her love life around. Then she won't need the salt or the lime anymore to shoot that old memory down. Just remember her heart's on the mend. If you ever come back to see her again, don't ask her on a straight tequila night. You'll start thinking about him, then she's ready to fight. Blames her broken heart on every man inside. On a straight tequila night. Don't ask her on a straight tequila night. She'll start thinking about him, and she's ready to fight. Blames her broken heart on every man. On a straight tequila night. Don't ask her on a straight tequila night. She'll start thinking about him, and she's ready to fight. Blames her broken heart on every man inside.
This is the Quality News Network. A U.S. intelligence report conflicts with the Bush administration view concerning Iran's nuclear weapons program. The National Intelligence Estimate released today indicates that Tehran's nuclear weapons program was stopped back in 2003 and remains on hold. The report concludes that they don't know if Iran intends to develop nuclear weapons for future use. The world's largest conference ever on climate change opened this morning in Bali, Indonesia. The two-week UN summit attracting more than 10,000 participants from 190 countries. The political party of Russian President Vladimir Putin won more than 60% of the national vote. That means when term limits force Putin to step down early next year, he may stay in power by being appointed prime minister. Russian election was judged unfair, though, by the world's major election monitoring group based in Brussels. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez's proposal to suspend term limits so that he could rule his country indefinitely turned down today at the ballot box. At least five people were killed, three wounded, when a backpack bomb exploded this morning at an Islamic school on the border of Pakistan and Afghanistan. Iraqi troops discovered a mass grave with the remains of a dozen people, including a paramedic who disappeared more than a year ago. It is the latest grisly find at a former stronghold of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, located about 60 miles north of Baghdad. Also in Pakistan, former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif banned from candidacy in January elections. The Election Commission ruled against Sharif because of his criminal convictions for terrorism and hijacking during the 1999 military coup of Pervez Musharraf. Under intense international pressure, Sudan's president has pardoned the British schoolteacher imprisoned for allowing her 7-year-old students to name a teddy bear Mohammed. The 54-year-old teacher will be escorted out of Africa later this afternoon. As a gesture of good faith, Israel today opened its prisons, releasing 429 Palestinians. The move is designed to shore up support for moderate Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Meantime, in the Gaza Strip, three members of Hamas were killed in a gun battle with Israeli troops this morning. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Now this message.
Remember when the name on the door said it all? In today's world, it's the website that defines a company's image. For better or worse, a company's presence on the Internet is a vital factor in how it keeps existing customers and attracts new clients. Byte Technology of Monterey is a leader in a new approach to web design. Byte designs a new site based on the mission, purpose, character, and indeed the energy of their clients. Byte is particularly successful in presenting their clients' name to the global Internet community because they approach the design with a clear, defined process. By fully understanding the client's business, motivation, and operation, they are able to translate the company's critical values into the new website. In addition to original design, Byte works with clients to update their website to reflect changes in target markets, products and services, and the business climate. Byte Technology. See what they're about at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
The federal government says that more than 40 million people in the U.S. cannot afford health care. The report by the Centers for Disease Control also revealing that 25 million Americans did not seek dental care and 19 million are without prescribed medicine. Diabetes drug Avandia may increase bone thinning, and long-term use of the GlaxoSmithKline medication may lead to osteoporosis. That's according to research published in Nature Medicine magazine. Shares of Big Lot fell 6%, even though the discount retailer posted a better-than-expected increase in quarterly profit. Investors were reacting to the company's announcement it expected a droop in holiday sales. Dell Computers has consolidated its entire ad budget, awarding the contract to British firm WPP, the deal worth $4.5 billion over the next 3 years. And it's the ending of a 129-year era. AT&T ending payphone service across the U.S. by the end of next year. Company officials say payphone usage has dwindled, while cell phone and wireless use is up, way up. Light sweet crude oil trading at $89.31 a barrel, gold at $794.70 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 57 points to end at 13,314, NASDAQ down 24, S&P 500 off 8. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Almost 9 minutes past the hour. Well, I tried to play all you zombies. Holy cow. Like I said, I've never had an MP3 stick before. But, you know, if one can stick, you know, if you can get an MP3 with a scratch on it, I'm just the guy to get it, you know, because that's how I am. All right, so at 9 minutes past the hour, we will go straight to the phones. Hey, who've I got?
Hi, this is Juanita.
Well, hello, Juanita. How are you?
Hey, I wanted to make a few comments, and I'm try to be short about your little talk while I get.
Well, okay. If you could make any sense of it, I welcome you to.
Oh, yeah. Tonight I've been in and out, so I haven't, you know, but
it felt pretty insane coming out of my own mouth, so, you know.
I'm blown away, believe me. But one thing I wanted to say about, I thank whoever did the money in my name. It really touched my heart.
Oh, well, I'm glad.
I wanted to say thank you to whoever. But anyway, and I'm in agreement with you about the English only. I have a friend, she says, well, those people, they always speak English. And I said, well, did you know that in Florida it used to be Spanish before it was English? I didn't know that. And I said, yeah. I said, Texas. And
California, New Mexico, Arizona.
Yeah, places, yeah. But I think it's so stupid not to want the extra education. I mean, our language is not the best language in the world. I think some of the other languages are so beautiful. And what little I know about Latin is it's such a beautiful language.
Well, I will never forget, Juanita, when I was a high schooler and we had an opportunity to have Russian taught. Now, this was during the late 70s, and it's the Cold War and everything. And and the good Christians, the Baptists and the Church of Christers and so forth, came out and stopped us from being able to have a Russian class. Now, that class was going to be taught by the very woman who had taught English to the Soyuz cosmonauts for the Apollo-Soyuz mission, if you remember that. But you know, we can't have them learning that commie language. They're liable to come out of that Russian class all communist.
It's so sad. And I just want to just jump around. I'm not going to take a lot of time.
Jump all you want.
From my experience, I thought that was so wonderful, what you said about your mother and your dad about their education. My folks, they were all farmers from Georgia. And my mother, she was the second to the last, you know, of eight children that, you know, that grew up. And she had to be taken out of school in the sixth grade because of situations up there. Her daddy was very careful about his daughters being ladies and all.
Mm-hmm.
And you could lose your reputation really easy. But anyway, she loved school. And my mother and my daddy, both my daddy went to the ninth grade. And they could, the way they were taught, they could read and write. And a lot of people that are college educated, is spelling and all, and math, you know, the basics. And I think they had a better way of educating them back then.
I suppose, to be fair, Juanita, that there was less stuff to teach as far as getting on in basic society then, because you didn't have to teach a kid how to run a computer back then. But you know what? A kid who comes out of high school and can't at least get around Windows is like a kid getting out of school in 1939 who couldn't use a telephone.
Yeah.
Or a typewriter.
Well, I think that's another thing. There's so much other stuff that goes on in schools that it's so totally unnecessary. But without all of that and the way that they teach reading and all, and of course now we've got no child left behind. But anyway, I was just saying that I had the teachers that I had that I really remember are the ones that went off the curriculum. And I had one teacher in the sixth grade that, she was the principal, so she did what she wanted.
Yeah.
And she taught us Greek and Roman mythology, and I loved it.
Sure.
And I didn't know it was helping me in life, you know.
Well, for 2,000 years, those have been the stories that this culture grew up on.
Yeah, and you touch of it in life and everything, and it's really interesting. And then I had another teacher that he was the English teacher, and I think I was in the ninth grade, and I was scared to death when I had to make a speech. Well, he taught us speech, and he taught us journalism, and different things that were not in the curriculum, and I learned to get over my stage fright and enjoy making speeches. And I remember he liked to play things by Carl Sandburg, and I remember one thing. Now this is kind of ties in. I guess I'm trying to make a point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead. You're doing fine.
Well, he was talking. There was an Indian and a white man together out on the beach or somewhere where there was a lot of sand, and the white man drew a circle, and he said, "This is what you know," and he drew a circle around it and said, "This is what we know, the white man," and then he took a stick and drew a circle around it all, and he said, "This is what neither one of us knows," and that just stuck in my mind. You know, we think as white race, we're so taught to think we're so superior, and really we're dumb in many, many ways.
Well, yeah. What is it? The admission of ignorance is the beginning of wisdom. Some wise man said that one time.
We miss out on because we think we're the top dog, and like you were talking, you were going through all that history and all, and about everything, you know, is we know so little, and why don't we want to learn from others? I love other people, you know, from other cultures and countries. I'm so interested in them because there's so much that they can teach us, and in so many ways I think they're superior because they don't think they're superior, you know, to us, and we think we are. I'm talking about as a group, Bob. I'm not talking about you and me.
No, I understand. I understand completely.
But we miss out on so much. It's just like in World War, you know, they thought, oh, those little Japanese, they can't do this and that and the other. And they were very smart. You know, you got to know your enemy, you know, that we've been laughed at. You remember the story about George Orwell? And the elephant?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Well, to me, you know what I'm trying to make a point is that if we think we know so much more than the other, so-called other people, then we're the losers. We lose out.
Sure we do. And that's a manifestation, Juanita, of our hubris.
Because
you know, hubris is pride that leads to a downfall, I guess is a shorthand way of putting it.
What we
think we don't need to know may wind up being the very stuff that saves us.
Right. And another thing, too, I've learned a lot about, like with the black race, you know, a lot of white people, oh, they're so stupid. You know, oh, white black people, they're so dumb and stupid. Believe me, they survived in this country. They're brilliant. When you learn about just their simple ways that they, the songs that they sang, it was like tom-toms to the other people, to the other slaves. Like Follow the Drinking Gourd.
Sure.
The
English forbade singing to the Irish for I forget how many years, because it was how they communicated amongst themselves in a time of extreme political repression.
Yeah.
Art, whether it be spoken, sung, painted, whatever art is almost always a manifestation of the inner life of the artist and a call to the community to be more greater? I mean, that's the origin of theater in ancient Greece, and a fascinating manifestation of that has arisen in New Orleans lately. There's, of course, a profound, tremendous, amazing play called Waiting for Godot.
I've heard of that.
And it was recently put up in the Gentilly neighborhood of New Orleans and in the lower Ninth Ward. No ticket cost. Just broad, New York Broadway actors. And they quietly advertised it on street corners and on phone poles and stuff. And they did it outside, live theater. It was absolutely brilliant.
Oh.
Because it had so much meaning for a city that has been brutalized, not just by a weather pattern or a weather phenomenon, but brutalized by the government non-response to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so much ignorance on the government part.
Sure.
So sad. Yeah, and another thing I wanted to say something about was you were talking, you had about the translation about the man telling them how to beat the wife.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so strange. What I was getting from it was I was thinking, this is like we in the South, say how to whip your children, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah, that's what I tried to, that's the point I tried to make, Juanita, is that if you pull away the culturally incomprehensible clothing,
mm-hmm.
because a three-piece suit is as incomprehensible to a rural Saudi as his robes are to a redneck Southerner, or better yet, a pair of Liberty overalls or some such. If you pull away the cultural context, his words could come out of the mouth of a Christian fundamentalist. That's the point. It wasn't about bashing the man for being Arabic. It wasn't about bashing Islam, because that's not what I'm about. It is about.
I understood that.
It's about pointing out just plain base level stupidity and the pernicious effects of fundamentalism. Because you could have that same conversation in English, down in the basement of the local fundamentalist snake handling church.
Right. That's right.
I mean, the Pentecostals and so forth, they dictate how their women wear their hair.
Yeah.
And the Baptists have cited approvingly the portions of the Pauline letters that tell men to tell their wives to keep their damn mouth shut in church.
Yeah. That's right. And it's all, I don't know, it's just really sad and frustrating and...
But by being aware of this stuff, and by being aware that and stopping with this foolishness that there's something different about people because of their religion, there's not, by being aware that it's all samey, if you know what I mean, we are better able to oppose it here at home.
Yeah.
Because there's, here's a good example, Tom Tancredo. He has advocated dropping a nuclear weapon on Mecca, the holiest site in Islam. He's advocated dropping a nuclear weapon on Mecca. What differentiates him from 19 Saudi engineers? That's something else. These aren't ignorant peasants who flew the planes into the buildings on September 11th. They were highly educated college students, okay?
Yeah.
What's to differentiate Tom Tancredo?
Right.
From those highly educated Saudi men.
Yeah.
There's no difference between them.
Yeah, and you hear people who say, let's do that.
They were all drop-dead, ignorant human beings who want to solve their perceived problems and grievances by creating more problems and grievances. It's beyond ignorant, Juanita. It's stupid.
Yeah. And, they'd love to get rid of us, too.
Sure.
We don't think like they do.
You think the Hannity followers and the little knuckle walkers that listen to Savage and O'Reilly and Limbaugh, if they could get away with it, if the law wouldn't do something about them, you think they wouldn't come out here and start putting bullets in the backs of liberal skulls?
I believe that. And
you know it's true.
It may come true, but before too long if something doesn't change.
They've said as much. I mean, I've got hate mail, okay?
Oh yeah.
You know, and they're not.
You know, Guy James, some of the hate mail that he used to read. I mean, things that they were going to do to him. You know, sure you get the same.
Oh sure. And it's
and they're the losers too. They're the losers.
Well, sure they are. They want to live in darkness.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of times, and I've kind of come to a conclusion, you know, people say, well, if you don't like it over here, just move somewhere else. Well, I think they should. They won't all think alike. They don't want anybody different. Well, our country's not based on that. Our country's based on a freedom, isn't it?
last I checked, yeah.
Yeah.
But
and,
see, it's
you know,
their
why
free.
Don't they leave
but
and
Juanita,
go where
it's,
they
it's,
can all think alike and just be happy together.
But it's their freedom, not ours.
Yeah.
You mentioned George Orwell, you know, Animal Farm. Some pigs are equal, but some pigs are more. All pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than other pigs. This is that.
Yeah. Oh, believe me. I worked in a place where, you know, that there was a bunch of them, and they. Whatever they thought was all right for them to do, that was fine. But if somebody else did something similar and wasn't in their little clique, well, they were terrible. And it just about drove me bananas sometimes.
Oh, I can well imagine. Juanita, I've got to roll along.
Really, I want you to keep on keeping on.
Well, I'm not going anywhere. So,
but I mean, you know, keep on talking. I love it.
Well, bless your heart. I sure will. No doubt about
okay.
it.
Okay.
All right.
Okay,
you take
you
care,
take...
Juanita.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And, gosh, I hope you're still with us on the phone. Are you? Yes, it appears you
yes,
are.
I am.
Hey, who have I got?
This is David from Maine.
Oh, hey, David. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. On your subject of schools and education, I just want to tell you from my experience that I detested public schools where I was growing up, and I can give you a reason why.
Okie doke.
I think a lot of people and a lot of parents are a little bit, I'd say obtuse or distorted in what is happening in schools in terms of just they don't even know what's happening before their eyes in kind of the way even in the so-called liberal and what part of the problem I have with public schools, and I saw it designed right from the get-go, was the Latin thing. The Latin classes, not many people were allowed to take that unless you had any honors under your belt, and you started to see the class separations of where if you weren't from a certain income, a lot of times you saw a lot of the same income people in Latin. You didn't see that many poor people in the Latin classes and the honors, and really it turned off a lot of people, and they were like, well, F this, I'm just going to take Spanish or French. Forget you. And the one thing that I noticed is, like, it didn't make sense to me because you were singling out, and this is why I hate general academics, this is why I hate honors, this is why I hate all of that segregational class systems in terms of, and I think a lot of parents fell for it, like hook, line, and sinker. But really, it really did destroy a lot of education in my mind. What happened is you couldn't take the classes that you wanted. You took some of the classes you wanted, but you would never get to take those classes. Even if you said, hey, can I audit it? No, you can't audit it. You mean I can't go in my study hall and audit it and just this class and learn? I don't even care about the grades. They wouldn't let you do that. And that's part of the problem I have with the whole educational system. There is the seclusion, the segregation. And a lot of parents did not catch on to it. And still, in my neighborhood, it's the same way.
Well, the last I heard about Latin and classics, for instance, down in one of the, well, in the largest school system in West Virginia,
uh-huh.
which is Charleston, the Kanawha County school system, they had Latin, but the waiting list for it was so long that you couldn't take Latin 1 till you were a junior.
Well, Bob, I think part of the problem, like I said,
now I don't know, and you know I can't stand the idea of it as elitism.
But it is public school elitism is everywhere, and I know parents don't want to believe that, but it is in every single classroom, and it never made sense to me why you couldn't take a class and audit it if you had 10 students or maybe 12 students. And that there, and to me, it occurred to me, it was designed this way. It was designed so the people who did not have the types to tip the books, the enlightened people, you had a few poor people in the straggling class would get into some of the honors, and they would get in, and it was so tricky. It was like, oh, but you have to have this and this and that, and it didn't make any sense, because when I would go in one of my classes for whatever, if you had 12 people and you had open seats, you say, you can't audit this? Nobody can audit? No, they said, no, you can't do that. And again, it is this elitism that nobody really talks about.
Well, David, I'm cognizant of the fact that by growing up more or less middle class in Alabama, that I had some sort of a privileged upbringing. I never realized I was having it at the time. But when I started the high school there was a college bound, the initials AP had not come into parlance yet. Okay. There was college bound and there was not college bound. Everybody got a general diploma at the end, but there were, it wasn't like you declared for it and you were married to it and, carried it around on your back. But if you wanted to go to college, there were a set of classes you took. If you didn't give a damn about going to college, you didn't.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is...
And believe me, I sat through some high school classes that I despised at the time.
But to me, it strikes me as peculiar and suspicious at the same time that they don't even let students audit classes or anything. And if you just don't care about the grade and you just want to learn, it doesn't make sense don't even have that many students in a class, and that happens a lot. And again, it points to me that it is designed to set up this way. Even in the public schools, it was designed this way. Keep the learning segregated. Keep it away from each other, class system by class system. Okay, another thing was they would pressure kids in my school to take alternative school like right away if they were coming through the door and they described their particular situations or something like that, or they
hustle them off the books before they can screw up the demographics.
Well,
I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Yeah, it does.
That's incredibly bigoted. For me, it's frustrating, David, because I certainly understand what you're talking about, and I deplore it. Education is education, and if a kid wants it in the public school system and is willing to do the work, that should be the only benchmark. That should be the only criteria that are used to make that determination. On the other hand, my kids don't even get that far.
Yeah.
Latin? No, it ain't going to happen.
Our
educational system in the state of West Virginia is so profoundly screwed up right now that they're asking kids who are 13 and 14 years old to declare a major in high school and basically lock in what it is they want to do with their lives. A coal miner, a mountaintop removal, a bulldog, dragline operator, healthcare, general, oddly enough, they don't offer something called liberal arts, which is the very foundation that New York Times editorial talked about, the very foundation of 150 years of pretty decent American education. My kids can't choose liberal arts because, by God, the high school don't offer them.
Yeah, I understand completely what you're saying. And
there's no journalism department. There's barely a band. There's very little in the way of an art class. God knows there's no Latin. There's no drama department to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
Their computer science department is basically is more or less how to get around in Windows. The least they could do if they're going to work it that way is put a couple of Macs in there and let people understand that operating system, too.
Is there a shortage of teachers?
Sure. We lose teachers on the elementary level to put a teacher in up at the high school, or lose a teacher at the high school to put a teacher in at the elementary level. On the other hand, there is no shortage of money with which to pay our administrators.
I always thought that they made the school public educational system, and I can't speak on the private system, they made it complicated in a way where you had to learn this and learn that and learn this and learn that to make people disenchanted with the whole educational system. I always thought that. I never believed in the B's and the C's and the D's and the F's. I always thought that that was one of the worst psychologically damaging things you could do to a kid, and that's probably where we differ. But, I mean, I saw it all somebody...
Well, there are places where that's measurable and places where it's not.
I disagree. I think every class...
I mean, 2 and 2 is 4, and if you don't write 4, you've got it wrong.
Well... That's not what I'm talking about necessarily. What I'm talking about is if someone's in the class and they're asking questions and they're learning, I think it really puts a wrench into things by making them do test after test after test and just BS that's not going to matter in the end. What matters is the memories that they're going to have of the time in the class and what they were learning and the participation and the communication and dialogue that they created in that class, not the test itself. And I think that's another system of sabotage for someone to be to come out of the system. And I've seen it a lot of times where people won't even question it. Like I remember in English class, in particular, I was having I was in academic English, and I did a report on diamonds. And I did the report on diamonds, and I missed like one little footnote, and the grade counted like 40 times or something. And I had to take summer school of English, even though my grades were all right for all that, because
well, that's
like
silly.
40
and
I know, but that kind of stuff happens all the time in public school, and people don't really pay attention to like the little details. And that's why I really deplore the grade system in terms of how it is now. Probably it's even worse. And colleges, don't get me started on the whole colleges thing. Wow.
Well, we don't have a uniform grading system in this country. I mean, for instance, you know, an 80 is a C here. Where I grew up, an 80 was a B. And a lot of it is arbitrary and frankly silly, David. You know, look at the most expensive, so-called best legal education in the United States, bar none, if you're going to law school, is Yale, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless they've changed it, my understanding is, and we could ask Mark Levine, there are no grades for the first year of law school. It's all pass-fail.
Now, what does that say? It says something to a society, but I guess what it is I'm getting at is the fact that, you know, all of the grading systems and just how everything is designed, and a lot of people say, wow, you know, but even the public school of the 80s and the 70s and the 60s and all of it, to me, I always looked at it as when the way they did this grading system was purely out of insecurity because
well, it's purely American in many ways.
Yeah.
Or Anglo-American, I guess, would be another way to put it. That you've got to somehow quantitatively determine who's at the top of the heap and who's at the bottom. What I despise is a damn bell curve. I hate a professor, college or teacher or whatever.
Yeah.
Who grades on a daggum bell curve, you know, who before the test is taken has determined that there will be X number of A, there will be a couple of A's, a few more B's, a bunch of C's, an equal number of D's to B's, and an equal number of F's to A's. No matter how good the worst is, it's predetermined. It's downright Calvinist, David, and it's just nasty.
That reminds me of how around when I was in when in my schools, like so many kids would be just so excited about the honor roll system, and I never understood it. And until, you know, I saw some kids around me, and I'm sure you had this experience, where they just get totally destroyed and they completely change because they're not on the honor roll two or three times and their parents are completely berating them. I hated that. Bob, I had to tell you, I hated that system with a passion because I just saw everyone around me is like, It totally transformed us. I got to get on the honor rolls. I got to get on. Like, why do you care if someone thinks you're smart or not? All you have to do is know it inside.
Oh, David, I remember 1L so well. You know, the first year of law school grades come out, and they're oh gosh, back up. I went to law school because I wanted to go back to school. I had done graduate school in theater, realized that I didn't want to be a starving actor all my life. So, yeah, what the hell? I wanted to get back to Morgantown. I wanted to go back to school. So I decided I'd go to law school, so I went to law school.
Mm-hmm.
I took the LSAT, the law school entrance exam, with a howling hangover, and then just walked away from it. But I was in the same room with a lot of people taking it who were sitting there looking like dogs trying to pass a peach pit. They had invested their entire lives in whether or not they did well on that test. I've seen it time and time again. Then I got up there to law school, and I was confronted with all these people who were like, you know, obsessive, compulsive, and it's like, Jesus, people, it's school, okay?
Yeah.
But they were eaten alive by it and waiting. Oh my God, I didn't make law review. My life is over. I'll never get a good job. I'm not on the law review. Have a beer. Lighten up, Francis. You know? And so I'm with you in that argument.
I kind of understood, though, why a lot of people were like that. It wasn't because, the way I thought, a lot of times, like 8 times out of 10, it was always the parents or the family who always said, this is what's most important. This is it. There are no minuses in our family, that kind of thing. And I saw, like, the discipline that they would, like, a lot of these kids would go, they would tell me, I just ask them questions, like, what happens if you get an A minus? Like, oh, you don't want to know what I get revoked or what happens or...
No, I used to piss off a lot of people because I'd look at them and say, so, you know, this is how you're going to define yourself? This is all there is of you?
Yeah.
Well, you're just not serious, Bob.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. And you know what's funny about that, what you're saying about, if you look at the so-called liberal colleges, the colleges that are so-called liberal,
yeah,
I wouldn't say are, but...
Well, liberal versus liberal arts is fairly different.
Those follow, like, the conservative, moderate teachings of, like, everything on the books. And still, Bob, that's not conservative enough. You have to be just a little bit more. And then that's... People keep just going along with it, and that's what happens. Like I said, you don't give someone the rope because they'll make the noose, right?
Yeah.
That's what's happening in our whole society right now. In everything we see, in terms of the media, in terms of television.
Let me give you a great example of why I get so flustered, David.
Yeah.
My daughter was a seventh grader last year. She's an eighth grader this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, they offer a foreign language in seventh grade, Spanish. My daughter's Spanish teacher was a person who had never uttered a word of Spanish in her life or even had the subject.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. I mean this in deadly honesty. Couldn't order flan in a Mexican. Couldn't order a burrito in a Mexican restaurant. Okay, mm-hmm. At least, you know, if she had to speak Spanish. And what they had instead was, they would sit and watch a video feed of someone that they couldn't interact with.
Yeah.
And it was just, I mean, I was slack-jawed. What? You know, and my daughter's telling me, I'm like, you're kidding, right? I mean, because, you know, sometimes, you know, 12 and 13-year-olds, they get stuff wrong and they don't really understand. So one day I was talking to one of the parents of another kid that was in the same class. I said, is it true that teacher, and they went, absolutely. You know, can't find the bathroom in Spanish. And, you know, And my Spanish isn't that good either, so I'm certainly not being critical along that. You know, I would not presume to teach children Spanish because I have never given it that much study. Now you could turn me loose with a copy of Wheelock's Latin, and I can get a crowd of first years through a year's worth of elementary Latin. I can do that because I got the background for it.
Yeah.
But we're turning teachers loose teaching subjects that they're not even familiar with because we've got school boards that are administrator heavy, that are, you know, paying six figures to the superintendent of education and starting out a teacher at $21,000 a year. Something's wrong.
Yeah, and just to end it on this will give you an idea of how the school systems are up here. My mom substitute teaches at an elementary school, and when they have a particular rambunctious child who's really sparked with energy, and he's not doing anything wrong or whatever, they have what is called turtle time, where they tell them to put their head on the desk and just sit for minutes and minutes and minutes. And I thought, this is so retarded. I mean, the kid's doing nothing wrong and asking questions. This is how they discipline them.
Yeah, put your head down and stop asking the daggum questions.
And to call it turtle time.
Well, you know, pull your head in your shell.
Well, yeah. They'll be needing that turtle time if the way things are going. They'll have to pull out that old PSA of duck and cover.
Well, that's what I was talking with Phil earlier tonight. I said there's a lot of people in America that just have the hunker down mentality. Just put your head between your knees, pray you don't have to kiss your ass goodbye, and hope that we get to January 20th and George leaves peaceably.
Yeah, but before I go, one last thing. I was talking to one of the most nicest conservatives I know, like they say with them. He was the nicest guy I know to the serial killer or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was telling him about the closed society thing,
mm-hmm.
of what Naomi Wolf was talking about. I don't know if you listened to that 45-minute lecture.
Yeah, I did. She's fascinating.
All right, well, I said, this will put a chill in people and a spike in people's stomach when I say this. I said, hey, he goes, you don't think we're headed to a closed society? He goes, what think you are at? And I said, I think we're at step eight. And he goes, no. He goes, no. And I said, okay, so what step are we at? And I go, so where are we at then? I didn't say what step. I said, where are we at then? He goes, oh, we're only at step two. We're only at step two. That is how programmed and lost people are. I'm telling you, that's where we're at now. We're only at step two.
Yeah, only. It's okay if we're on the road. Yeah. We're just not that far down it yet.
Well, that's all I got.
You know, me, I'm all for not taking that exit at all, but, you know.
Yeah.
I know. David, thank you very kindly.
No problem, Bob. I hope you learned something.
I always do, David.
All right, man.
Bye now.
Later.
Our buddy David in Maine. Let's finish off with a couple of interesting little pieces. Something you will not find in, you know, so-called papers of record in the United States. Remember Richard Pearl? You know, in talking with Guy James a little bit ago, he mentioned the fact that Paul Wolfowitz is back in the government. Yeah. You know, that full body shiver, that's just what that did. Well, equally interesting article from this, from Thursday, November the 20th, in The Guardian. And I ran across it, and, you know, what are you going to do? Just reading straight up, international lawyers and anti-war campaigners reacted with astonishment yesterday, so this would be November 19th, after the influential Pentagon hawk Richard Pearl conceded that the invasion of Iraq had been illegal. Richard Pearl. Yeah, that Richard Pearl. Like Phil from Daytona Beach talks about members of the Project for a New American Century. He's one. He's got the membership card and the certificate suitable for framing. Okay. He conceded the invasion of Iraq had been illegal. In a startling break with the official White House and Downing Street lines, Mr. Pearl told an audience in London, "I think in this case international law stood in the way of doing the right thing." I will not scream. I will not scream. I will not scream. President George Bush has consistently argued that the war was legal, either because of existing UN Security Council resolutions on Iraq, also the British government's publicly stated view, or as an act of self-defense permitted by international law. Oh, please. But Mr. Pearl, a key member of the Defense Policy Board, which advises U.S. Defense Secretary, in that case Donald Rumsfeld, said that, quote, international law would have required us to leave Saddam Hussein alone, unquote, and this would have been morally unacceptable. Then he said French intransigence meant that there had been no practical mechanism consistent with the rules of the UN for dealing with Saddam Hussein. He was speaking at an event organized by the Institute of Contemporary Arts in London, and he argued loudly for the toppling of the Iraqi dictator since the end of the 1991 Gulf War. Quote, "They're just not interested in international law, are they?" said Linda Hugel, a spokeswoman for the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. "It's only when the law suits them that they want to use it." Richard Pearl admitted it was illegal to start the Iraq War. Richard Pearl said it had been illegal for us to start the war with Iraq. French intransigence meant that there had been no practical mechanism consistent with the rules of the UN for dealing with Saddam Hussein. So we just made crap up. And we just got 4,000 of our best and bravest slaughtered in the filthy, stinking sands of the Iraqi meat grinder. And we, you know, just for the hell of it, murdered something on the order of 1 million Iraqi citizens and sent another 1 million into refugee camps. But impeachment's off the table. They knew it was illegal when they did it. You knew it was illegal when they did it. And now they are so brazen that they will come out and tell you to your face that they knew that it was illegal, because they know the Democrats in the Congress don't have the guts or the spine or the stomach for actually standing up for the constitutional principles upon which this country is and was founded. This is hand in glove with the Karl Rove. You know, Rove has come out and said that the war was Tom Daschle's fault. Yeah, on one of the this week with meeting pressing the meat before the facing the nation. He blamed it on that intransigent war hawk, Tom Daschle, forcing their hand, even though they didn't want to go to Iraq. The Democrats made them. And he doesn't even giggle when he says this stuff. Is that just amazing to you? Does that just set your hair on fire? Or at this point, has the fatigue gone so deeply into the bones that you just sit there and go, it's what they do. I mean, you know, I'd be upset or excited if they did something different. But, you know, they lie. Why are we surprised when they lie? And just, you know, move on. Oh, there's so many stories we didn't get to this evening. An appeals court has stricken a faith-based prison program? Americans United presented evidence that inmates who took part in Inner Change were given better treatment and perks that were not available to others, including better housing and expedited access to classes required for parole. At trial, inmates testified that they were pressured to convert to evangelical Christianity, and that the beliefs of Roman Catholics and other faiths were ridiculed. The court records show that non-Christians were frequently referred to as unsaved, lost, pagan, and sinful by interchange staff. The program required staffers to abide by an evangelical statement of faith. The decision by the appellate court in the Eighth Circuit held that the faith-based program is unconstitutional. It was unanimous. It was joined by retired Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. The only thing it did was reverse a portion of the lower court ruling that required Interchange to return funds it received prior to June 2006. Interchange will still need to return funds it received after the June 2006 ruling. There's that. There's the new study out from the Heritage Foundation that says that there are no hungry Americans. I'll try to have that one for tomorrow, because you just can't walk past one of those. Nope, nobody's hungry in America. Everybody's full. Everybody's got a full tummy. $3 a day is plenty for food stamps per person. I mean, hell, a family of four, $3 a day on food stamps, that means that they are going to have $12 to spend on Christmas dinner. What are they bitching about? So that's where we end it this evening. With a little smattering of perhaps where we will begin it tomorrow evening. I have not heard any further from Peter Godbold, so I assume that he still has computer problems. Or not computer problems, but internet connectivity problems. And for that reason, will not be live this evening. So if you didn't hear last Friday's program with two of the most amazing gentlemen I've ever heard, you'll want to make sure that you're sticking around for that. And thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT consultant. Thanks to our chief engineer, our video manipulator, our... Wow, what isn't John Fox? Thank you, John Fox. Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, at WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you value what happens on the horn, you value what Ben does. A brief reminder that for this month, I don't have any choice. We have to run up what we need for the month to $3,500. Because we've taken steps to improve programming and keep programming going that have to be paid off ASAP. So please remember that if you've got it to spare, to keep independent liberal conversation radio going. I wouldn't say something like this just ex cathedra on my own. It was done as a function of consultation with a number of people. Please, if you can help, even though it's a tough season of the year to do something like that, all I can ask is that you please do so. And if you have, and we thank you. And if you are unable, don't feel bad about it. I understand that better than you might know. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. In Rochester, New Hampshire, a tense five-hour standoff is resolved peacefully. A man thought to be carrying explosives walked into the campaign headquarters of presidential candidate Hillary Clinton and demanded to speak with her. Leland Eisenberg of Somersworth, New Hampshire, first held, then released, three hostages unharmed. Senator Clinton is currently campaigning elsewhere in Washington, D.C. and Virginia. Eisenberg surrendered peacefully to authorities, who took him into custody without incident. CNN's Wolf Blitzer reports that Eisenberg made a series of phone calls to the CNN newsroom while holed up to say that he is upset with the current state of mental health care in the U.S. Eisenberg was due in court this afternoon in connection with a domestic violence matter between himself and his wife. Five Amtrak crew members were seriously injured in today's train crash on Chicago's South Side. An Amtrak train collided with a freight train on the same track while making its regular run between Grand Rapids, Michigan and Chicago. The National Transportation and Safety Board will investigate. In Baghdad, security forces carried out a pre-dawn raid, arresting dozens of Sunni militants after a bomb was discovered in front of a leading Sunni Arab politician's office. Among those arrested was the politician's son. Talks between the European Union and Iranian leaders ended without